The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
In our prelude this morning, Unwritten, Natasha Bedingfield urges her listeners to feel the rain on your skin. No one else can feel it for you. No one else can speak the words on your lips. Drench yourself in words unspoken. Live your life with arms wide open. Today is where your book begins. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Sunday Worship with the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Our fellowship is a principle-based, truth-seeking, justice-seeking, welcoming faith community in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, on the web at tpuuf.org, and wherever you may be this somewhat damp fall morning on Zoom. I'm Jerry Lazaro. I chair the worship committee here at the Thomas Paine UU Fellowship. And let me first remind everyone here in the sanctuary to please turn off your cell phone or silence it to avoid unnecessary distractions and interruptions during the service. And secondly, on behalf of the committee and the fellowship as a whole, I want you to know that whoever you are, wherever you may be on your life's journey, on your spiritual journey, whatever you must in conscience truly, responsibly believe, however you identify or express your gender, whomever you love, whoever loves you, you are welcome here and invited to join us in worship this morning and every Sunday morning. Well, today I'm honored and delighted to officiate a very special service featuring the work of members of our Thomas Paine UU Fellowship Writers Group, of which I myself am a member. We writers who meet on Saturday each month to share works completed or in progress have taken up Bedingfield's challenge to translate our unique experiences into words previously unspoken, to see each day as the place where we begin or continue to write the book of our lives. Each day is an opportunity to reflect upon and honor our history and weave the story of our lives and share it with others. In short, to honor our heritage and create a legacy. Now, participating in a writer's group may seem like just an add-on to the mission of our fellowship, but I tend to think it's an integral part of that mission. Our seven principles are reflected in the works that are shared and in the discussion that our writing generates, from affirming personal worth and dignity, to affirming acceptance and spiritual growth, from affirming a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, to affirming the interdependent web of existence of which we are a part. In short, in the work shared with the writers group, I hear expression of the human spirit that transcends one religious faith or any religious faith to reach the essence of spiritual practice. Robert C. Fuller, who's a chair professor of religious studies at Bradley University and author of the 2001 book, Spiritual But Not Religious, writes this: spirituality exists wherever we struggle with the issue of how our lives fit into the greater cosmic scheme of things. We encounter spiritual issues every time we wonder where the universe comes from, why we are here, or what happens when we die. We also become spiritual when we become moved by values such as beauty, love, or creativity that seem to reveal a meaning or power beyond our visible world. An idea or practice is spiritual when it reveals our personal desire to establish a felt relationship with the deepest meanings or powers governing life. I find that deeper, more universal spirituality alive and well in our UU faith community. And it's alive and well in our TPUF writers group, as I think you'll agree when you hear samples of the work shared at our meetings. But first, as we do every Sunday, and at other times when we meet as a faith community, let's light our chalice. The chalice and the flame together form the symbol of our free faith. They signify, among many things, our openness to the wisdom of many ages and many traditions, and our aspiration to keep the light of truth, the warmth of compassion, and the fire of commitment to freedom and justice burning within ourselves and throughout our world. We light our chalice this morning with words by Rachel Naomi Raymond. She's a pediatrician and author who takes a holistic approach to health and healing. We are here to grow in wisdom and learn how to love better. And we do this in our own ways. Slowly, we become a blessing to the world, to those around us, a light to the world. And as we light our peace lamp, as we do each time we gather for worship, we offer a brief prayer that in spite of all the conflict and violence we witness all around us, we still maintain hope for peace within ourselves and throughout our world. Please respond, may peace be with us.
And with all the people of the world.
Our gathering song this morning is hymn number 324, Where My Free Spirit Onward Leads. The words are set to a traditional English melody, and they remind us of the realities and challenges of the human condition. The words also remind us of our connection to the earth and to all living things, and especially to the human family with whom we share a search for truth and meaning. So please join in singing if you have your hymnal. Use that. You can stand if you move off so people can see the words on the screen. The words are going to stream underneath the video, so I hope you can all see them well enough to sing along. Where My Free Spirit Onward Leads. Any children here, so we needn't sing them off to their classes, I guess, right? Okay. So we can move right to the message this morning. I now have the pleasure of turning over the podium to members of our TPUF writers group who'll share a work that they've created. Our first writer this morning to read for us is Joanne M. Walker. She joined our fellowship just this year. She's an attorney specializing in environmental law and an adjunct professor at Temple University. And in her professional life, of course, she's been writing for who knows how long, right? Instrumental writing, you know, the writing is part of her professional responsibilities. However, during the pandemic, she found herself gravitating toward writing to capture her life experiences and share them in written form with others. Joanne.
Good morning. Okay, so I write now because I want to, I pick subjects that I want to memorialize, something that I want to be remembered or a person I want to be remembered. So this piece is called Kareem. Kareem died on November 16th, 2021. He was 18 years old. The world failed Kareem. We will never know his true potential or what he could have brought to the world. From cradle to grave, Kareem never had a chance. I met Kareem in 2017 while I served as executive director of a counseling center for victims of crime in Philadelphia. Most of the clients that our staff worked with were either members of families impacted by homicide or individuals who were victims of violent, non-familial assaults. Sadly, despite a staff of 10 therapists, we had a waiting list of hundreds. But Kareem came to us in a different way. Kareem was a child in the Philadelphia foster system. He was troubled. He was 14 when we met and had already been placed in a residential facility due to his behavioral problems. This was after he'd been removed from his mother's care as a toddler and shuffled through multiple foster homes and group homes. One of our staff members was Kareem's court-appointed advocate. When we hired Michael, a Black male therapist, a rarity in the field, Kareem's advocate convinced the court to allow Michael to work with Kareem. When I approved this assignment, I knew very little about Kareem except that he was troubled, had run away many times, and had issues with anger and acting out. Since Michael worked evenings, arrangements were made to bring Kareem to our office around 5 p.m. once a week. It was a day that I usually stayed late, so I was there when Kareem first arrived. He was an imposing and somewhat scary figure in some respects. In others, he was more like a helpless little boy. At 14, he stood almost 6 feet tall and was built like a linebacker. He stood in the reception area looking only at the carpet until Michael took him into the counseling room. As time went on, the attendants who drove Kareem to his appointment started to just leave him in the waiting room and come back later. Sometimes Michael would be delayed getting to the office, and we couldn't leave Kareem alone since we didn't want him to wander off or run away. So I would bring him back to my office to wait. At first, he just sat there and stared at the floor. I bought some magazines that I thought he might like, and he flipped through them. Then one day he spoke to me, pointing to a photo of my son. Kareem asked, "Is that your kid?" I said, "Yes, his name is Ethan. He's a bit older than you are." His response shook me. "Do you like him?" I replied, "Yes, he's a nice young man and I love him." Kareem seemed confused. He was quiet for a while and said, "I don't think my mom likes me." I said I was sorry he thought that. Silence, and then Michael appeared at the door and Kareem went to talk with him. Over the course of the next year, I saw Kareem frequently and he'd spend about 10 minutes waiting in my office each time. The only question I ever asked him was whether he wanted a drink or a snack. One evening, out of the blue, he asked if I ever played checkers with my son. I said, "Yes, we played checkers." The next time he came, I had a checkers set on the table. He sat down, set it up, moved a piece, and told me it was my turn. We played checkers every time I saw him after that. Sometimes he'd ask me a question, other times he was silent, but he seemed to feel comfortable. In December of 2017, we learned that Kareem was being moved to a group home in the Poconos. There would be no more sessions with Michael and no more checkers with me. On the day of his last session, just 2 weeks before Christmas, I gave him a portable game set that included checkers and some other games. Inside, I put a card with my number and told him he could call or text me if he wanted. I also told him to practice and said maybe he'd find a checkers partner at his new place. I hesitated to call it a home since I didn't think it would last. The Poconos did not seem a good fit for Kareem. He nodded silently. A few months later, I was surprised to receive a text from Kareem. He was okay, but he hated the Poconos. He'd found another guy at the house who played checkers. The texts would come and go. Sometimes he'd be silent for months. I left that job in 2018, but I'd still hear from Kareem every few months. Eventually, they moved into a foster home in western Montgomery County, and he seemed happier. He had a nice foster family who supported him, and he had some friends at school. Still, I'd get an occasional text. The last text came in October of 2021. He had a girlfriend, and her name was Janelle. When the alert came on my phone from Temple Campus Police that there was a shooting near campus, I did what I always do. I prayed it wasn't one of my students. A few days later, I learned that it was Kareem. I sat there, silent, stunned, tears dripping down my cheeks. I later learned that he was shot in the chest during an armed robbery. He was walking his girlfriend home when they were approached by two guys with guns. Kareem stepped in front of Janelle to protect her, and he was shot. He died on the sidewalk. Soon I learned that his birth mother and his foster mother were arguing over funeral arrangements. The woman whom he said didn't like him was all of a sudden involved, not in his life, but in his death. I chose not to go to the funeral. I didn't trust myself not to say something to her. Weeks later, two young men were arrested. The one who pulled the trigger was also in the system. Like Kareem, he had been shuffled through foster homes, group homes, and residential facilities for most of his life. Like Kareem, he ran away frequently, only to be caught and placed in the next home. Like Kareem, he was a confused and angry kid who had no stability in his life. One might say that Kareem was the lucky one here. After all, for a short time, he had a foster mother who loved him, and he died doing the right thing. But as some people said to me at the time, he's in a better place now, and he's finally at peace. I hate those words. People said the same thing to me when my husband died. These sentiments make no sense to me. What I know is that Kareem lived 18 years in severe distress, basically alone and feeling unwanted by his mother and by everyone else. He never had a chance. There are so many more Kareems out there, invisible to most, yet I see Kareem's eyes, his weariness, his fear, his anger, and yes, his innocence in so many. I even saw it in the eyes of his accused murderer, but this kid would likely spend the rest of his life in a cell while Kareem lies alone again in a box.
Thank you, Joanne. As I said, you know, in writing, we explore that connection we have to the human family in a very intimate and direct way. I see by the order of service that I'm next on the program. As Rocky used to say in the Rocky and Bullwinkle show, now for something completely different. As most of you, I've been a UU for roughly 50 years now, and a member of this congregation for at least a dozen. I'm very involved here, as most of you know, and as chair of the worship committee, on the communications committee, past president, et cetera, et cetera. One of the most enjoyable activities here for me at the fellowship is being part of the writers group, many reasons. Anyway, I'm going to share, and you know that my main interest in creative writing is poetry, so I'm going to share a poem with you that takes a rather kind of satirical and somewhat humorous look at an age-old problem of what the hell happened to your kids. Okay. It's called Old Music, And as you know, because of my interest in music, often in my poems, I will divide a poem up into sections that have musical titles. So this is divided into three sections. The first is overture. The second is scherzo scherzando, which, if you know your Italian, is like a joking joke, right? The third is the finale. There are a lot of allusions in this poem to people and various things. You probably will pick up most of them, but the first one is to a man named Arnold Schoenberg. You may know him. He was one of the pioneering composers and music theorists of the 20th century, developed a whole different way of conceiving music that he called 12-tone music, but that's another story. Just have to know that he was one of the eminent figures in 20th century music. Old music, overture. Arnold Schoenberg's eldest son, to his father's eternal disappointment, couldn't read a note of music, recalls my colleague, eschewing lemonade at a post-concert reception. The two of them met in a business course at UCLA, where the young Schoenberg was pursuing a degree in something. Scherzo scherzando. The refrain's familiar. Surgeon's son couldn't make a Band-Aid stick. Math prof's progeny scores 380 on the math SAT. Engineer's Cub Scout son, despite dad's visible hand, places dead last in the Pinewood Derby. Preacher's little angel terrorizes girls in Bible class, chases them around the room with a pair of scissors, nearly converts three successive Sunday school teachers to atheism. And what of my son at 16, reading comic books like The Uncanny X-Men and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, rolling his eyes at Robert Frost, preferring instead the hopeless, head-banging poesies of Metal Church, Suicidal Tendencies, Nuclear Assault, and Megadeth? Or my daughter at 12, who read constantly, yearned to explore the world, nearly flunking geography, and of all things inconceivable, reading, having found the Diary of Anne Frank really boring, but moved to tears watching the movie. Their pursed lips skew at my latest heart-to-heart, articulate more distinctly than words, Jean Schmeens, I'll design my own, thank you. Their eyeballs drift up into their eyelids, glance over my shoulder at walls of giant posters where a sultry songstress Madonna, minus child, her milkless, milk-white breasts sprilling from her negligee, sells her fleshy crimson pucker, where a post-apocalyptic stormtrooper peddling an Anthrax album declares, I am the law. Their thoughts counterpoint themes in my parental songs. Yeah, like the past is like a, you know, a nice place to like visit, but I wouldn't want to, you know, like live there. Finale. So why should your children give a damn after all how you scrape out a living? Or whether they rehearse the dreams you've dreamed for them? Should it matter after all what methods you've mastered to secure a place in the world? What songs you played to celebrate good times, woo a love, mourn a breakup, comfort yourself, amuse a child, cope with confusion and doubt? Why should they revere epiphanies you've had of beauty's truth, truth's beauty? Motives you've devised to counter that voice recorded in your every cell, echoing in your magnum or minimum opus, that dissonant note always reminding you that life, at best, at most, is precarious, unpredictable, and alas, temporary. So I get it. I really do. I've read the poems of Heraclitus. The times, they are always a-changing. I can live with that. I can move with the times. And eclectic heretic I've become, if only the kids wouldn't refer to 60s rock as classic and stop calling 50s rock old music, we could be singing from almost the same hymnal. Next up on the program, I believe, is Karen McCann. Karen's been associated with our fellowship for many years, has been a member for the past, since 2014, right? Okay, and a writer for many years. And she's going to share something from a very special project that she's engaged in and that she shared with us at the Writers Group meeting.
Good morning. At the Writers Group meeting every month, we do enjoy hearing each other's stories. They can be happy, sad, but I think most of all, many of them are inspirational. A few years back, my children gave me the gift of StoryWorth. Maybe you've seen it advertised on TV. It's a company that sends out a prompt each week for 52 weeks, and you can respond by email to that prompt. They give you extra prompts in case you don't like the one they send or it's not applicable, like, Karen, how did you like the military? Well, I wasn't in the military, so I went to the extra list. And after 1 year, they send you back all of your writings and you can go through for a final edit and fix the typos and maybe take out that part about Aunt Jane that didn't sound very nice, mm-hmm. and finish your stories, throw some pictures together and send it all back. And then this is what they end up sending you, this lovely book, which is a legacy for your children and perhaps grandchildren. And you don't have to use my photo if you don't want to on your book, but it's great fun and it really captures your perspective of your stories. If you have siblings, you can pretty well count on the fact that they don't agree with some of your stories. Well, too bad, this is my perspective on what happened and who was at fault, as I remember. And now I'll read you one of these little stories out of my book. And it's called, How Did You Rebel as a Child? I didn't rebel too much as a child. I believed in the eyes in the back of the head story that Mother told all of us. In that she was always watching me, I tried hard to comply with the rules. It seemed like there were so many rules. Mother had a wringer washer in the basement. It was a tub that swished the clothes around, and then you fed them through a wringer at the top to get the water out. You piled them up in another tub, rinsed out the soapy water, put in clean water, and started the rinsing process. They were rinsed twice. Then you fed the load again through the wringer and then hung up the clothes to dry. If it was warm, sunny weather or breezy, warm weather, you hung them outdoors on lines to dry. If it was a winter month or rainy, snowy weather, you hung the clothes up on lines in the basement. And no kid was supposed to get anywhere near the hanging, drying load of clothes. You can see where this is going. My two older brothers and I played hide and seek and tag a lot. And outdoors, I used to love to hide in the drying sheets on the line, as they were folded over the clothesline and in between the lines. I didn't realize the boys could see my feet. In the basement, I like to hide there too, in the drying clothes on the clothesline. Because they were line drying, there was always water on the floor. Because this part of the basement led to the below the ground fruit and vegetable winter storage cellar, the floor was dirt, so it was always muddy. I got caught once having accidentally pulled the one clothesline down onto the muddy basement floor, and now the clothes were all muddy. These were white sheets, because that's all you had back then, and several of my father's work white shirts. The boys were yelling for Mother to come see, show her what I'd done, and my goose was cooked. As I wasn't tall enough to rehang the clothes on the outdoors clothesline either, So when I pulled them accidentally down, I had to go get my mother and tell her what I did so she could rehang the clothes. That probably wasn't so much rebellious as it was me just being dumb. I told my piano teacher that I couldn't play a solo recital, that my mother would not allow me. Of course, when my teacher talked to my mother about this, the jig was up. I recall trying to steal a gingerbread man cookie from the back of the Christmas tree, like my brother Philip often did. Except I was very clumsy, and I knocked over the entire tree, broke some ornaments, got yelled at, and I never got the cookie either. As a teenager, I often did things I wasn't supposed to do. There was smoking, drinking beer, going places I wasn't allowed to go, the mountains or the shore, going with people I wasn't supposed to be going with, boyfriend, driving my car out of the state. Come on, it was only to New Jersey. The beaches, the sand, the food, the beer, and that sunburn that gave it all away. I don't think I gave my oh-so-clever ideas the long look. I was rather impetuous. I used to tell Mother that I was going to my best friend Donna's house overnight. Donna told her mother she was coming to my house to stay overnight. And then we went together with our boyfriends to the movies, or out for burgers, or to meet up with other kids. Violet, my mother, finally caught on and called up Dot, Donna's mother, and both Donna and I were grounded for some time. And there was the secret trip for the kids to a friend's house in the Poconos, where a blizzard occurred and we couldn't get any of the cars out. We all had to call our parents and explain. I was the only one who got grounded. I don't think I'm still allowed because of that little escapade. I was a typical kid, and it did seem as though Mother always knew when I was up to something. Thank you.
I think, as you can see from that, I mean, what Karen's involved in, you know, kind of, it's paying homage to that personal and family history and then creating a legacy for all of us to enjoy. I mean, this is one of many, many stories she shared with us that have that same humorous twist and one wonderfully universal theme. Next up is Jan Backes, right? She's a member of the Ascension United Church of Christ. That's right, yeah. Jan is a member of the Ascension United Church of Christ in Norristown, PA, and has been a friend of our fellowship for many years, and has participated for years in our writers group, where he shares his insights with us. And this morning, I believe Jan is going to share a poem with us, right? Okay.
Thank you, and good morning. I became a member of Thomas Paine in 1987. And then I wasn't a member, then I became a member again. But my heart is with Thomas Paine. And I mean, I love my church, I love my pastor. But Thomas Paine, right here. And as I said before, my pronouns are he, him, and his. I am a female to male transgender person. It's easier for me to get up here and say that now, because I used to be really closeted and in a lot of emotional pain. And speaking of pain, a year ago I was here saying that I didn't have any, and now it's back. But I consider myself fortunate and blessed. Let's see. I've been in writing groups for over a decade, and even when I was going to my intensive outpatient program, I wrote every Monday for 3.5 years. So I write two prompts. I love prompts. This little, it's called a zine. When we write and submit stories, The proceeds go to charity. So here's the poem. I named it Brood Awakening because that's where we were at the time I wrote it. We were in a coffee shop in Royersford. Nothing is as it used to be. I've not the space to house my thoughts. This is on space, by the way. Space is small, it's large, long and wide, scrunched up, the final frontier, the continuum. Where to begin? It's you, me. Fold yourself in time, space closely follows, one sentence, then another. Don't hold too tightly. Your thought could slip through your fingers like a wet bar of soap. All my life, my love, I've cherished the small stuff. It's about time, it's about space. Give me, bring a gentle thought to cradle my doings, beings. From you, I gain truth, satisfaction. We chain together moments with meaning, with life. The space that gives us love. Each is relevant. I am what I am. I am enough. Without you, I get things done. With you, I am complete. Grab a moment. Live life, all its dreams. Keep spacing your heart for the silly things. Quiet. Smoothly run the water as I catch you should you falter. Moods are good. Food for thought. I awaken good as new. Scrambled, too much thought. God knows I try. Succeeding, give, take, from here to there. Don't question, absorb and regurgitate. In my words, space is life and light and welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Flo Shore is next. She's been a fellowship member for roughly a decade. Flo brings a range of writing interests to our group, as well as experience, as Jan has, with other writing groups, and in Flo's case, the Women's Writing Circle, right? Okay. So you're going to share with us some special stuff this morning.
I have taken great inspiration from the early poets of Japan, Basho, Buson, Issa, etc., who wrote during the 1400s through the 1800s. In these simpler times, haiku, short verse poems, were often spurred by observation of nature and daily life in the world around them. These poems were written with a specific number of syllables in each line. I appreciate these snippets that harken back, shedding light on life during those times. I personally relate, as I have often referred to myself, as a champion of the mundane, savoring small details which can enhance and breathe greater meaning into our existence. I will share some short verses written with the style and cadence of haiku. The willow no longer wept after the storm. Her remaining limbs bore a delicate cascade of soft green lace, worn proudly one evening in spring. The pond, with its crystalline sheen, burst into a million ripples as a bullfrog leapt from a mischievous cat. Unwanted dandelions tower scornfully above the fresh-cut grasses. Must there always be a nuisance? A long day, we wash ourselves with smooth soap and old fingers, to bed at last. Rain against the window, distant thunder, my ponderings are enough to fill the day. Crisp white sheets, a cup of hot tea, the moon calls me to bed. The sun reproaches the waxing moon. How dare you shine brighter this day? Always doing, always going, but never being. Ice in a glass of wine displaces liquid, shifting sounds. Dogs in the gathering dusk, barking at phantoms, the cicadas sing. Summer speaks, autumn listens, winter marches, spring abides. Spinach leaves, rinsed and ready, tonight's salad. And finally, each day is a poem to be recited at dusk, to be fathomed in dreams. Thank you.
What did Natasha Bedingfield sing? No one else can feel the rain. No one else can speak what's on your lips. Each day is the, you can begin the book of your life, right? Each day is a poem. Thank you, Flo. Well, last on our program this morning, but never, ever the least, is Butch Larsenese. You all know Butch. He's been around for almost two decades, right? And has been a member, and then not in a member, and then a member again. Okay. Butch loves to explore the realm of imagination and the meaning of strange confluences of events in his life. He shares these often with us on Saturday mornings when we meet, right? And he's got one for us this morning.
Thank you. I've written about a lot of things. I use writer's prompts to get ideas. I like to comment on political issues, but the best writing I've ever done is now and with this group. I think part of it is the members. Also, I'm writing about what I know best, and it's about me, about events that happened in my life. And I when I'm throughout the day, no matter what I'm doing, if I'm sitting at my computer because I work from home, there are certain, like maybe 16 different events that keep popping in and out of my mind all the time. And I go, well, maybe they're there because they're really important to me. So I said, why don't I write those down and keep reflecting on them? There's probably a lesson in each one. Now, I tend to write about, you know, like I said, I write two different type of things. I call these holy moments. All right, this one's definitely a metaphysical moment, a sort of a supernatural moment, but they're not my favorites. My favorites are when I can, an incident happens in my life and the way I interpret it, that's holy to me. It's sort of like Thoreau. But going with the theme of the Soul Matters Month, I chose this. It's called Pitching a Dime. It was Monday, Martin Luther King Day, 2021. Teresa Adams and I were finishing lunch at Nana Rosa. Obviously, on Martin Luther King Day, you don't get a lot of choices of your lunch companions, but that's only a joke. That's a joke. I was only, I tease Teresa and she teases me back. All right. Yeah, that wasn't in, the, okay. As we walked in the parking lot, Teresa parked on the side facing the street, and I was parked in the second row. As Teresa and I were walking toward our cars, I spotted a dime on the ground in front of us. Jokingly, I said, Teresa, a found dime means that a loved one that passed away is communicating with you. I don't know if she took it seriously or not, but Teresa replied, yes, that's from my mother. Then she walked toward the row her car was in, and I shouted, my family never sent me a dime. I said this jokingly, but with a hint of sarcasm. For about 10 years earlier, I consulted a medium who was highly recommended by my friends. She met their expectations and more. I never met her before, but she told me things only my deceased parents could know. At the end of my session, she said that my father would pitch a dime for me. What she meant was that within a week of this session, I would find a dime somewhere, and it would be from him. This dime never arrived. As a matter of fact, the dime in the parking lot about 10 years later may be the only dime I've spotted since then. I believe the psychic communicated with my parents because she got everything right. So why didn't I get my dime? Why didn't she get this right? Maybe my father didn't care. So my joke did have some sarcasm in it. As I drove home, I dropped the issue, listened to the radio, and thought about other things. I put the key in the latch of the front door of my condo and opened it. I stepped in, placed my keys on a dining room table, and headed for the bathroom. I was washing my hands in the sink. I felt a cold object tumbling in the inside of my left thigh inside my pant leg. It tickled. I then heard the metallic sound of a coin drop on my bathroom floor. It landed directly at the arch of my left foot. It was a dime. I was shocked. Could this finally be a sign for my family that had passed on? I checked my left-hand pocket. I don't carry change in that pocket. I carry it in the right. Could I have put change in my left pocket today? No, no change. Was there a hole in my pocket? No, there was no hole in my left pocket. As a matter of fact, I measured the rightmost corner of my left pocket, the corner closest to my left thigh, as being 4 inches away from the inside of my left thigh. If it had a hole and a coin dropped out, it would fall down the front of my left leg, passing along the side of my knee, not the inside of my left thigh. Also, the coin wouldn't have been cold in my pocket, it would have been warm. All right, here's the
rightmost point.
When I returned to work at my desk at home the following day, I listened to an audiobook I bought by Teresa Caputo, the Long Island medium. About 5 hours into the book, Teresa described the exact same story as mine, with one exception. She met a man who asked his parents many times in his adult life to pitch him a quarter, and it never happened. One day in disgust, he made a statement that his parents never did this for him, and don't you know it, minutes later, the quarter comes tumbling down the inside of his left thigh, inside his pant leg, onto the floor. Why did it take so many years to arrive? Teresa Caputo said that the reason it took so long was that the deceased person may not have the spiritual strength yet to pitch a dime. She said that it takes a lot of energy to send an object from one dimension to another. I counted this additional count the next day as a synchronistic event made to confirm my event. Thank you.
Let me make sure. Oh boy, thank you, Butch. And we laugh just as hard as you do when the writers group does this. You know, as I think you've learned this morning, our TPUF writers are talented and thoughtful people, right? Who can inspire, educate, and entertain. And what you haven't experienced this morning is the wonderful sharing that occurs when we discuss the work presented at our meetings. We're committed to providing a collegial, supportive environment in which to explore the challenges and the rewards of creative expression. So our discussion doesn't focus on critiquing what is shared, does it? I think we'd all agree on that, right? Right. Although feedback is offered if it's requested, right? More often than not, we discuss the themes and the message in the work and how it relates to our own experiences as writers and as members of the human family. We meet at the fellowship, 10:30 a.m., once a month on either the last or next to last Saturday. The Zoom option is available for those who cannot attend in person. And if you're interested in becoming involved with the affinity group, watch for announcements in the newsletter and after worship services, and or let me know so that I can add your name to our writers group email list. And before we move on to matters of the heart, I do want to give a shout out to those who participated in our group over the years, who are not with us today, except I see Carl Mosley is with us online, and a shout out to him and to David Drum, and especially to Deb Murata, who played a leadership role in the writers group for many years. Anyway, so hats off to them too. Well, we've come now to the part of our service where we open our mics and our hearts to members of our congregation who are experiencing a joy that's lifting their spirit up or a sorrow or concern that's weighing it down. And after a brief musical meditation, which this morning is hymn number 1049, Vieni Spirito Creatore, Come Creator Spirit, you can come to the microphone stage right to share. When all those here who wish to speak have spoken, John will instruct those attending on Zoom how to participate in matters of the heart.
We will bring this time of sharing to a close with Spirit of Life. The lyrics will appear up on your screen in just a minute.
Spirit of love.
closing song this morning. It's a wonderful hymn, Just As Long As I Have Breath. I would encourage you to read the words of that. It's an inspiring tribute to the human spirit that affirms the meaning and value of life, that says yes. Yes to life, yes to truth, yes to love. And our TPUF writers, our fellowship members and friends as a whole, I think, are people who respond to life, all of it, with that resounding affirmation, a holy shout of yes. In closing, let me recall the words of our prelude. No one else can speak the words on your lips. That is, no one can speak our experiences for us. An author and UU minister, Sarah Moore Campbell, reminds us that, quote, we receive fragments of holiness, glimpses of eternity, brief moments of insight. And she urges us to gather them up for the precious gifts that they are, and renewed by their grace, move boldly into the unknown. So too our gifts of heritage and of creation. As we extinguish this flame, let's resolve not to let the spark of creative energy, that spark of the creator spirit, burn out, resolve to carry it with us, to share with those whose lives we touch and whose lives touch our own. Thank you. Please stay for announcements and for our postlude.